Hello, welcome to the photo show. Yes, sorry for the delay in coming back, but we had the usual kind of, can we? Ian has done the document this week all by himself, so thanks so much to him. And he'll be here a little bit later for the big show, so you can come and watch that. And he's also going to the photo show this weekend, so if you go to that, then be sure to look out for him. You'll know what he looks like after this evening either as well, so there we go. If you want to join in the shows and come to the studio and sit here and have a curry with us and all that kind of stuff, you can, it's fine. Muller's here, I'm here, and we're doing the photo show. So without further ado, let's get started. First story then is about a chap who... Muller. Bastard. Oh, that worked well.
You can edit.
I can edit. First story then is about a lad named Dale Sharp.
I'll leave.
he proposed to his girlfriend Carly Russell at the Arctic Circle under the Aurora Borealis and took some pictures of it. It looks like he stood on ice there, doesn't it? It's gorgeous. There's loads of other pictures as well on the Daily Mail, but I'm just not going to go to the Daily Mail website for it. It took more than one attempt, apparently, when the first trip abroad was aborted after Sharp discovered Russell had disposed of the bottle in which he'd hidden the $4,000 engagement ring because her luggage was overweight. So he threw away the ring he was going to propose with. He's got more money than sense. If you're going to reduce the weight of your baggage, you don't throw away the alcohol, do you?
I'm
oh,
sorry. No.
You throw away something else. Engagement or no engagement, the Aurora photos are amazing. Yes, they are. And I had to stand very still for it. well done, Dale. Malta's Azure Window. There's a picture of it. It looks absolutely gorgeous, doesn't it? Now, if you're a Game of Thrones fan, then you'll know what this is because it features heavily in the show. However, I don't know where it's set. I don't watch Game of Thrones, so I don't know where it. No, I don't know what the name of the place is. Can Muller Bike hear me? Oh, I can hear you. Yeah. What a start, says Hobbs. Bastard. I'm amazed you can actually watch it because of Virgin Media. So there you go. That's the arch. The Azure Arch was subjected to very high winds recently. The local authority have said that a number of years ago said that it was illegal to walk across the top of it because they were fearful of people's safety when it came to it. And also they were worried about the fact that it would wear it out and then it would collapse prematurely. Well, unfortunately, there was a really high wind the other week, and that's what it looks like now. Not good. It's completely washed away. What's interesting is that the pier on the left has completely disappeared as well. So whether that kind of was wearing through at the bottom, I don't know. Because if you look at the previous picture, it's looking a bit thin, isn't it, where the waves lap around it. But it was high winds and gale force storms and that kind of stuff. The authorities have said that the collapse was unavoidable. There was nothing they could do to shore it up. Engineering-wise, there was nothing they could do to save it. And it was all done and dusted. So one of the world's classic landmarks has disappeared. And if you're a Game of Thrones fan, that'll be CGI from now on then. Was that a bit harsh? Bit harsh. Popular photographer is dead. Yes. The magazine was started in 1937 and after 80 years, bit of serendipity there, it's gone. 2017, it's the last issue. It's the largest circulating imaging magazine. It started in May 1937 in New York City. And Pop Photo has also similarly been closed. Muller Bike is saying that Game of Thrones is filmed near Belfast. I think that's the indoor stuff.
And in Croatia.
And Croatia as well. That's the outdoor stuff. Last year it was restored to 6 issues a year without instead of monthly, but it wasn't enough to save the dwindling revenues and numbers, and at its peak, its circulation was 320, the peak its circulation was nearly 1 million copies, but now it's around 320,000. I would have thought you could make something out of 320,000 circulation. I can't believe that's unviable. It's a bit of a shame that we've lost print industries and that kind of stuff, and print magazines, certainly things like Macworld magazine. It's horrifying that that's disappeared. But we are in a digital age, aren't we? I mean, you've got to move with the times, and Macworld has done that. It's gone to a more viable setup. Seattle man Paul Skinner has received a jail sentence, this is quite interesting, for piloting a drone during a gay pride march, Seattle Pride Parade rather. He piloted the drone in 2015 and he knocked a woman unconscious with it. Now you're thinking, well, that's okay, he shouldn't be flying into it, so the bugger deserves what he gets. He actually flew into a building and then the thing dropped to the ground like a stone. It hit the woman and she received injuries that a detective described as not gentle concussion. So she was probably unconscious from it. There was a 4-day trial and it's resulted in him giving a sentence of 30 days in prison. And there's a hearing for the 25th of May to determine how much restitution he owes to the woman that he knocked out. This is quite interesting because I can't recall anything where a drone pilot's been prosecuted and imprisoned for something. And also, they're talking about this as being in the story. I've got a picture of him. There he is. They were saying that this was reckless endangerment and a serious harm for opportunity. It's kind of up there with like what's the word I'm looking for? Like a manslaughtery type thing. But that's the penalty. It's up to a year and they've only given him 30 days. So I think he's not going to get away with it. But they've appealed it and we'll have to wait and see what happens. But I mean, it is good that there's a bit of stuff on drones going on. I was at a conference the last couple of days and I was talking to a guy there and he said, yeah, we're using drones to do some stuff at the moment. And I was like, how are you managing line of sight and stuff like that for that? And he was like, oh, we can remote view it on, I'm pretty sure that's illegal. And I've seen some videos that have been made by commercial firms just recently and people are flying over roads doing stuff. And I'm sorry, but I'm pretty sure that's illegal. We'll have to wait and see. Be interested to see what happens with this one, whether you can expect that you will get a kicking in future if you manage to damage anything. And flying it in the middle of a city is a bit stupid as well anyway. I've still got scars from the lacerations that I had. New 2016 camera sales figures have shown that compact sales are dying off. I can't think why that's a bit of why it seems such a big story, but it is. Sven Skafisink, made up name, took the SEPA camera production data and created a chart from it. The compact sales have declined, whilst DSLR and mirrorless have stabilised. What's gone up is smartphones. 98.4% of consumer cameras sold in 2016 were built into smartphones. The market share was 0.08% for compacts, 0.5% for DSLRs and 0.2% for mirrorless. I think the compact has died really. It's the zoom that you can now get. I mean, I find the 2x zoom, optical zoom with the iPhone just fine. And I got one of those little camera things that slips on the back. And if I want to go out and I want to do some 2x stuff, I've got 2x that. And then I've got the optics on the front of that. So I've got great optical zoom and it really is good. I took it to the rugby the other week and it was excellent. Well worth the $45, especially since the frame came away from the back, which I've now stuck, and they gave me a full refund. Thank you very much, camera. But there you go. Compacts are dead. Long live the compact. We've got another graph. I can edit that as well, don't worry. Time for the gear. First story then in the gear, Insta360 has pulled out an Android phone attachment that you can stick on. It's a 360 degree VR camera and it's now available in US and Europe. It attaches via USB or USB type C to any Android phone. It turns your phone into a 360 degree VR camera using dedicated apps. You can use the smartphone to display via the viewfinder and also it'll capture a 360 degree still and 360 degree video with dual fisheye lenses. Quite how it decodes afterwards. I mean, it shows it there as like a bubble. I don't know whether that actually is the finished thing or whether actually there's software that turns it so that you can pan around and that type of stuff. It offers real-time image stitching and comes integrated with live streaming to YouTube and other platforms. So I'm guessing it's not just a bubble like that. It's something that you can scroll through like NASA are using. Content should be can be shared directly from the app via social networks as well. And it can be used as a 360-degree webcam on Skype too, which could be quite interesting. Mac support is coming soon via a software update. So I'm guessing you can take this footage and then put it in and then straighten it all out. It weighs 26.5 grams, which is nothing. 3K photos, 2.5K video, that's very good at 30 frames a second. And real-time image stabilization in the coming weeks via firmware updates. Price? Have a guess at the price, Mark.
500 quid.
$129. Wow. Bloody wow. I was gobsmacked. I thought, when I saw the story, I thought, oh, well, yeah, that's really, really good. Got to the bottom of the end and put the costings in. At $129, I think that's a massive purchase. That would, if I was an Android user, it's in my pocket. If someone wants to do one for iPhone, they would, but they're probably going to charge me about £1,000 for it, or $500. So $129, very, very good. It might be worth even getting yourself a shitty little Android phone that will do up to 4K video, because I think most of them probably could, and then just buying this just for the hell of it and keeping that as your camera. I'm getting a lot of 360 requests from customers. Oh, could you do a 360 video of the site and stuff like that? Might have to have a look into this. Yeah, that'd be good. Hasselblad has announced 4 XCD lenses. Now, I'd love to show you them all, but that's the only picture I can get. These are XCD macro 120mm f3.5. This joins the current lineup, and it's got a reproduction ratio of 1 to 2. Hasselblad plans to release other XCD lenses sometimes in the near future, up to 2018, including a 22mm, a 65mm and a 35-75mm. There's no other word on what the specifications of these lenses are in terms of build or blades or anything like that. They're designed for the X1D medium format camera, which is still the lightest and smallest camera that they currently do, or in its category as well. The body alone for the X1D is going to set you back $8,995. So that's 50 megapixels. Canon 5DR would get you 50 megapixel as well, but it's a smaller sensor, and it's $2,899. So it's interesting what kind of system you're into. No word on price on these lenses, but I thought I did see on one of the stories it was in around the 3K mark. So interesting. Photo 6 has launched the Aries 2 radio flash trigger system with more channels, because who doesn't have enough channels for their flash? I've got a 4-channel one, and it's never, ever needed to have to switch off a channel because something was triggering it wrongly. Additional channels and security are there because you don't want anyone setting off your trigger without your knowledge. That would be bad. I don't get this. It creates its own secure mesh network with a tunnel. It's a VPN. It's got a new facelift. It includes new cleaner control layout and LCDs to display functional information. As I say, I've got a 4-channel trigger and I've never had a problem with it. This one's got 16 channels. Woo! And the previous one had 8, and I bet no one had a problem with that either. It can deal with up to 4 groups of flashes. I think it's probably to do with extending so that you can get more and more flashes onto it. But if you do remote triggering, it shouldn't matter. Using 4 channels, they can trigger PhotoFlix Strato compatible flash units, such as the Mitro's Hot Shoe Gun and Shoe Flash, and the Indira Studio Heads. Oh, there we go. Max sync speed. Are some of the channels plus 1? That's cheap. Premature flash. Oh, right, okay. Last story. It's powered by 2 AA batteries. Lost 50 millimetres of range compared to the original Aries, which used to operate up to 150 metres. Quite why you'd want to operate a flash at 150 metres, I've no idea. Units compatible with most major cameras, and the flash systems includes Sony as well, apparently. $54.95 for each the transmitter and the receiver. I don't know. There's a picture of one mounted with a flash on it. It looks like it's the wrong way around, but it's not. Why would you manufacture a flash trigger that was 150 metre range? Maybe they just got a fetish about manufacturing stuff because they can. Who knows? Who knows? Nikon have created the Ultra Limited Edition. It's to celebrate their 100th anniversary, and as you might suggest, this is going to be a pretty penny, you might think. Although, there is no price at the moment. I'm thinking they're going to try and dig themselves out the debt that they're in with these. It's two DSLRs, three lenses in a gunmetal grey with 100th anniversary markings. It's a Nikon D5 and Nikon D5O, 14-24mm 2.8, 24-70mm 2.8, and a 70-200mm 2.8. That sounds like my shooting set for going out on site. Perfect. According to Nikon, there's only 100 of these kits made available because it's the 100th year. And isn't the serendipity lovely? Each camera will also, and Leo and trio of lenses will come in its own special case. And this one was behind glass, and they wouldn't let it out from the glass just for a picture from someone. But there you go. It's in. There's the box. Isn't it beautiful? I'll pass. Shame I shoot Canon, isn't it? Never mind, eh? And the last bit of news on gear is it's the photo show this weekend at the NEC. I won't be there because I've given up going to expos. I got that out of my system a long time ago. But someone who hasn't is Ian Lewis. Yes, he's on his way up at the moment, sat in a car, or he's still at Bristol Zoo feeding the goats. And he'll be up here for the big show a bit later on. If you want to see Ian, then you'll know what he looks like if you tune in. And he will be at the photo show signing autographs. do say hello to him if you see him. I'm at the NEC tomorrow because I'm going to go to Comic-Con, which is on. So expect the fact that the NEC will be rather busy this weekend. But I'll be there. It's time for the questions. I've got loads of pictures I haven't used. What an idiot. First question then comes from... scroll up. Stacey in Worcester. She says, "Dear Ewan, sorry to be stupid, but what exactly is a prime lens?" It's not a stupid question at all, mate. A prime lens is one that doesn't have a varying focal length. So if you've got... I haven't got one on here. I've normally got a lens sat on here somewhere. I've got a 8mm fisheye lens that fits on the front of me FS5 video camera, and that's a prime lens at 8mm. I've also got a 400mm lens that fits on my Canon, and that's a prime lens because it's 400mm. It doesn't change anywhere. So the 70-200mm lens that I've got is not a prime lens, plain and simple. It's not prime as in it's the one that you would use the most often, which a lot of people think, which is understandable. It's just the fact that it doesn't go anywhere, okay? So if you want to get closer or further away from your subject, you've got to get off your arse. That's the long and the short of it. Nothing else. Is Ian's donkey helping by trumping on the way up the M5? Very good. Are the lenses free if they're on prime? No, they're not. It's really good. Hope that helps, Stacey. It doesn't make a difference to your life anywhere other than you don't lie awake at night thinking about it, I would wager. Second question. This is from Borough Barrister. I got this last night off him. Sometime back on the big show, I think you had a discussion about microphones and sound recorders. I use a Canon 5D Mark III for mainly shooting wildlife photos, predominantly birds, but would like to record. He does shoot some rather nice pictures of birds as well, actually. But I'd like to record audio while recording through the video. The sort of thing I like to record is the dawn chorus and also specific bird song and that type of stuff. I have used a Rode mic in the past, but it's a bit dated now. Do you remember what your recommendations were, or do you have any recommendations for microphone or recorder? I've got about £700 as a budget. Well, that's good money, because if you wanted to record really good audio, you could get yourself a Rode NG3 or NG2. I've put a link in the doc. And that would be about 170 quid, and that'll give you great directional audio capture in a, as a shotgun mic. There'll be a little bit of hiss on that, but you'll remove that in post, no problem. The one thing to do when you've got DSLRs is don't use the AGC audio capture system that's on the camera. They're nearly always crap. The 5D Mark III is better, lots better, but it still produces hiss, and it's still difficult to get rid of in post. So stay away from that. Based on the fact we've got 700 quid to play with and we've only spent 170 on it on an NG2, I would suggest that Burra Barrister gets himself the Atomos. Which version is it? It's the Atomos Shogun. Atomos Ninja 2. That's an HDMI in, so you can do the micro HDMI out of your, or the mini HDMI out of your Canon D5D into the Atomos, and then put your microphone via, you'll have to do a connection where you go from an XLR to a mono input on a 3.5mm, because that's all there is on the Ninja. But stuff that in, you've got earphones that you can monitor, you will get crystal clear audio out of that. There'll be no hiss, no horrible noises or anything like that. And it just takes SD cards, so it's perfect for sticking in up to a 256 or something like that. You get tons of stuff on there. And the other thing as well that's really lovely about the having the Atomos stuff, I've got one here, I've got the Assassin, is that you've got a nice big screen. So if you're struggling like me as you're getting older to do manual focus is way, way easier with the screen on it. So it's perfect. Last question then is from Simon. He says, whilst we were out recently in London, we were doing the touristy thing and saw a celebrity. I won't say who, but they were out with their kids for a family day out. They weren't the kind of celeb that either of us would be interested in approaching, but my wife and I had a serious discussion about whether he should expect to be left alone. And afterwards, I wondered about when a celeb can expect privacy in terms of photography. Love the shows. Keep up the good work. Regards, Simon. I think the most current case on it is Naomi Campbell versus Mirror Group News. And that went all the way up to the Law Lords, Supreme Court would be now. She was coming out from a drug rehabilitation facility, I think, and she was snapped doing it, and the Mirror published it, and she said she had a right to privacy because that was a private thing coming away from her therapy, and they had no right to take a picture of it. And the Law Lords ruled that no, she was in public, she had no expectation of privacy because she was in the public arena, she was coming out of an open door into a public street. And basically, if you're out in public, you've got no expectation of privacy whatsoever. Anyone, anywhere can take a picture of you, and you can take pictures of anyone that you like while you're out in public. I took one of Matthew Wright a few years ago when I was in Trafalgar Square and saw him, and he stuck his fingers up at me because he's a cock. But I had every right to take the picture. He didn't have the right to ask me to delete it. Trafalgar Square is slightly different though, because Trafalgar Square is also a piece of private land, it's not public. So if there is no license in there to take photos and someone asks you to remove it and then the owner asks you to remove it as well as, then you could be asked to delete the image and not take remove it. But it's still open air, so it's difficult to say that they've got an expectation of privacy there. Callum Best had a case, and I can't remember who it was against, but he went into a nightclub and he went into a private area of a nightclub. And because it was a secondary, like VIP area of the nightclub, the ruling in that case was that he did have an expectation of privacy. Therefore, when they took pictures of him doing something that I can't remember, and I'm not going to libel myself by making it up, he did have a right to have those images removed and gain compensation for it. So it comes down to whether you should be able to expect privacy or not. Generally speaking, I think most people are pretty good with celebs. I remember as a kid, I went to Windsor Safari Park, and I think they used to have like a dolphin show or a killer whale show there. Jack Charlton was behind me and my mum and dad. And I wanted to turn around and say hello to him and have my picture with him, and my mum and dad wouldn't let me because he was with his kids, and they said, no, he's come for a day out, leave him alone. Which I thought was kind of good. And they're right, he should have been left alone, and he was generally, actually. So that's it. I mean, if you're in public, you've got no expectation of privacy. Anyone in the public highway can take pictures of anyone else. You can't stand on the public highway, though, and shoot pictures into a window, because the person inside that house has an expectation of privacy. That's about the size of it. Good question. Really good question. If you've got a question, then send it to us to BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com, and we will get it answered as best we possibly can. We're quite quick today because we've got the Mac Show coming up in 30 minutes. Big Show's going to be here at 8 o'clock as well as. We've done a time change as well in the US, so we haven't done it here in the UK yet. So who knows who's going to show up? It could be all over the place. If you want to join the Fantasy Photo League, we did last month's self. We're on to Construct for this month. You can still join in. Someone who only joined the competition last month is already halfway up the league table. So it proves that you don't have to wait till the very end to come in. So join in. Construct is the title. Closing date for that will be the last day in March. There we go. Send all your entries to BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com and send us all your photo questions to BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com as well. Right, I won't be at the photo show this weekend. We won't be back here next week with the photo show because we're having a week of doing other stuff. So we'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. Get out there, get snapping, join the photo show competition, join the Fantasy Photo League and have a good time. Thanks for listening. See you soon.